Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You are listening to Mist Apex iRacing Podcast. Let's get faster. Welcome to Mist Apex iRacing Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Spanners Reddy, and whilst we have been focusing on making you faster on track, we are a podcast for the iRacing hobbyist, and a big part of iRacing is the equipment. It's a bit of a broad church, isn't it? You can have people jumping on with controllers on a laptop screen, or you can have people on 80 gajillion pound rigs with motion sensors, vibrating pads in their back, with big motion rigs moving around, force feedback. You can have direct drive wheels, you can have VR flat screens, you can have super PCs, or you can have computers running at 20 frame rates a second. I've been most of those, apart from the top end. So we're going to talk a little bit about equipment today. And I'm joined by, in a very, very particular order, based on who I think is best at iRacing. Let's see. Oh, they're all going to be offended now. I'm joined by Kyle Power, who's probably got the highest iRating on the show today. Hey, Kyle.
Hey, what an introduction. I'll go with that.
You've got the highest iRating out of the four of us today, haven't you, I think?
I think so. Just under 4.6K at the moment. Like to break 4.6 at some point, but not really too bothered. Try not to get too hung up on it.
You're right. I mean, iRacing can be a specific tool. It can also be a bit of a flex, but it does also allude to the fact that you are not quite alien pace. That's fair to say, but you are like there or thereabouts, like on pace with the top guys.
Just below alien, I'd say. Better than average, not quite amazing. So somewhere in the middle.
And we should explore at some point what we mean by the term alien. I guess it's just somebody who's driving at a pace and you just think that just seems impossible. And even like the top guys and the professional drivers and the top sim drivers are just going, ooh, that's impossible. And I always find that whatever tier, whatever split I'm in, even if I'm in like the fourth split out of eight, there'll be two or three guys whose iRating is far too low. They're in my split, but they're driving at alien pace. Someone who drives at alien pace in a kart, or used to, it's Alex Jeansy Van Jean. Hello, Alex.
Yeah, the used to is more a weight thing than anything else, but rather than a talent thing. But yeah, no, you were right to announce Kyle first when it came to sim racing quality. I've been racing Kyle for many, many, many years now on Sims, way before iRacing, and before we got to iRacing, and he just has this strange knack where it doesn't matter what car you throw at him, how much practice he's had, he's just there on the pace instantly, and it's honestly infuriating. It drives me nuts because I have to work at it and work at it and work at it, and sometimes still don't get there.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. Like I can see a direct correlation to how many practice sessions I do into a session as to whether or not I can get to my best pace, and my best pace being maybe 2 seconds, maybe a second and a half off the top guys. Kyle does seem to be there or thereabouts annoyingly quickly.
With Kyle, my issue with Kyle is he's able to get within a couple of tenths of the aliens, but if I get within a second of Kyle, I'm happy. That's how chronic the situation is. But sitting there at his 4.6.
I know, I hate that. What's your iRating? What's your iRating, Alex?
2.4, I think.
That's still pretty good.
I might have lost a little bit last week because last week was bad.
That's pretty good. I think I'm sitting around 1,800 at the moment. So does that put me higher or lower than Matt Two Rumpets, who's on the panel with us today? Hey, Matt.
Lower.
Oh, where are you? Where are you sitting? Give us your flex.
Just over 2,000.
Oh, okay. That's pretty decent. And how much do you guard your I rating? Do you find yourself, like, will you go to series where you know it will grow your I rating deliberately? Do you avoid things that are going to be like, oh, that's going to be an I rating killer?
No, I think really what I do is I pick strategies that will reduce I rating loss when I race. But I race F3 and I race endurance races, which are notorious for not being good for I rating.
No, that's true. But I know there are some people who will, like, they'll go, oh, well, I won't race in this particular race because I've not had enough practice. Whereas my approach to that will be, yes, I didn't get a chance to practice, but I want to be in the race with all my friends. Therefore, I will just be super careful. I will start from the pit lane or deliberately not qualify so that I'm at the back. And I'll risk the fact that it's not that I'm going to lose I rating from being smashed out. It's just that I will be, like, at the back of the midfield. Alex.
Here's a question. If you've considered starting at the back, so just not qualifying,
yeah,
have you started from the pit lane before?
I have, but it seems like too much of a penalty. Like, people get away a bit too much.
Because I'm considering it for this week, for Monza.
Yeah, I tell you what, this is actually a really interesting topic. Not at all the one I was intending to go down. So I've explored these options. From the pit lane, it's too much. The pack just gets away. You've got no chance. From just starting at the back and saying, right, well, I won't qualify. I think quite a few people have that approach, Kyle, because if you deliberately don't qualify, sometimes you've got like 5 to 10 people who also didn't set a time and you might be ahead of them. And then you're in the worst case because you are, like, just in the mix of people who fluff their qualifying.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. It's all very well and good until you have 7 or 8 people who have exactly the same idea, and then you end up stuck in a whole group of you being overcautious, tripping over each other and just fall away from the main pack usually. But Alex brings up a really good point there. It's Monza, and with tracks like Monza, with a turn one that is renowned for big first corner pileups and puntings, even when everyone's trying to be careful, but there's a big concertina effect up the field. So the people at the back have to be extra careful. And it's a very, very good point and quite a good tactic. If you really want to get some SR, probably best to start at the back, but never, I don't get the pit lane starts. I don't think that's a good call at all.
No, I mean, for us, because we're in a kind of group thing with the swarm and you're like, oh, but I can be on with 20 guys I know. So, you know, sometimes we have to compromise to be involved. You don't want to just be sitting there in Discord watching everyone. If you start just at the back, so there are a bunch of people there who will just mess up qualifying and have 2 1Xs and be at the back with you. But it does work occasionally. And I have done it, Alex, where I've been at the back and say there's 3 guys behind me and I'm like, I can handle this. I get a good start. I very clearly move over to one side to try and let someone past. And then the guys behind are like, oh, what's he doing? That was my plan. And then it ends up like 3 of you, 3 abreast into turn one, none of you who had any intention of having any kind of fight. But it does work, and I have done it to good effect before. You see, you know, the big, big crash, you know, the big ones, where if you were in that midfield, you would get swept up in it. You can laugh, look at that collision, and pick your way through. So I think there is some merit to it.
Yeah, it's that whole thing. You get into that first corner and it's after you. But then you end up hitting each other, which is generally the case, which is that case of everyone's too careful and it causes more issues. But you're right. You do get to see the car flying in the air four or five rows further forward on the grid.
If you want to do it, you have to really, like, get out of the way, be prepared to, like, stop, let the entire pack go, and then head on your merry way. That's a tactic, I think, if you've really not practiced at all, but you're generally fine.
Yeah, because I'm stuck in this weird point at the moment where my I rating is enough to have me in the top split for every F3 race at the moment, and I don't like it. I'm having the conversation today about potentially tanking my I rating, so I can actually be in the slightly lower splits with people who I actually think I'm capable of racing against, because the guys in the top split, some of them are just bonkers. They're really aggressive as well. Not only fast, but they're mega aggressive. So it's a case of, oh my God, are you going to lunge me from 350 meters back?
Yes, you are. That's the act. But I think Matt and I have had these conversations. I found myself in this position in the MX5s, and I think you've been finding yourself in this position now, where because you're generally careful, you find that you're the slowest pace-wise in the splits you find yourself in. And I had that in MX5s. There's a lot more splits. I would just be the out-and-out slowest car in split one, two, or three. And you just go, oh. Every time it was just a case of trying not to have faster people crash into the back of you.
Yeah, it's one of the most frustrating things about iRacing, I'd say, because you drive, you're as fast as you can be, and you wind up having to race people who are half a second to a second faster a lap because you haven't crashed and other people have.
Yeah, and the only solution to that is get faster, which I've been trying to do with you guys here by having experts like Brad and Durian. Like, well, I've been pretty selfish about the topics, to be honest. Like, I've been like, oh, so just off the top of my head, what's the best way to take turn three at Spa? And I've been very specific to like where either me or my son are struggling. Kyle.
Yeah, I was going to say on being stuck in splits that you feel were too high for you, it does happen to us in top split as well. I said I'm slightly above the midfield, but not with the aliens, but I'm usually quite safe and quite cautious. Mm. And usually in F3, there can be a bit of carnage. So I quite often, or more often than not, in fact, find myself in a position where I'm in third or fourth. The people, probably about the five or six people behind me, are faster than me. And I'm clinging on for dear life. I'm losing the people in front and I'm just clinging on for dear life. And that's not much fun either.
But Kyle, to get to 4,500 iRating, like, you must be having brutally consistent results. Is that all from F3?
Pretty much F3 and the IGP series, the Formula One cars, and a couple of IMSA races, but predominantly F3. Yeah, and somehow been keeping my nose out of trouble. I must just be on an incredibly lucky run.
Yeah, when you talk about the whole thing of people coming through, perfect example for that was me last week. We were at Road Atlanta, which is a track I'd never been to before. Really liked it. It suits me down to the ground.
Awful, it's a bit like awful a, track.
It's like a kart track. So you've got to lob it at every single corner, and I just absolutely loved it. But on my stream on Wednesday, I didn't quite find the pace that I wanted. Got a really good start. Got well up the grid on the start and then just spent the entire race being overtaken because these guys were just so much quicker than me. And I'm just like, I wanted to fight, but it was almost like it was absolutely pointless.
And why did you get a good start?
Oh, because we used the, between me and Matt, I told him how. He figured out the what, and we've got the double clutch thing working wonderfully, which we are not sharing on here because it's a really, really good trick.
I feel so conflicted about this because the show is like about like sharing knowledge and like trying to like make everyone better together. And everyone on the video is like doing like the slicing the neck thing, going, no, kill it, don't do it, don't share. This is quite a moral, as us as content creators and communicators, are we really going to keep this magic start to ourselves, Alex?
All I will give is, in the configuration for the controls, you can limit the clutch. That's as far as I'm going to go, and figure the rest out yourself.
So I don't know this start. I'm guessing all you guys do have it. Brad Philpott was trying to get me to sit down with him and go through the procedure. Now, at the time he did it, I was really struggling with my kit. I didn't want to overcomplicate stuff. And I'm really happy with my F3 start, which is when the red light comes on, I've got no revs. I'm not doing any boy racer. Red light, first gear, that's it. When the green light comes on, I just press go and I go on my merry way. Kyle, then Alex.
That is the safest start ever, and I use it all the time. And in fact, the limit clutch start type thing I used for the first time the other night, and it is quite good, but there is a skill to it, and it can go horribly wrong. If you get it wrong, you will light the wheels up and wipe out half of the field, and you will not be a popular boy.
I have an example of getting it wrong. Both me and Brad have done this, so it's not just me thing, which is, I think it's more of a VR thing than a non-VR thing, which was, I have my pit limiter underneath the button I use for the second clutch, and I'm on the grid, and I've pressed the pit limiter, and I've rolled off the start, so I've got a jump start, and then I'm in the pit limiter, so I can't go anywhere, so then I have to find the pit limiter again. So yeah, there is a risk, but once you've got it sussed, and you have the setting set correctly, it's perfect every time.
All right. How good is it? What am I doing? Am I getting, how many grid spots am I mugging people for?
Well, if you go back and watch my stream from Wednesday night.
Sorry, I forgot that I watched all of that intensively.
I gained 2 grid slots.
That's pretty good. I mean, that's pretty good. With my start...
And then I had to back off because it concertinaed because there's no space. But
with my start, I guess there's kind of a lag because it's around the world. There's an inevitable kind of lag. So I always feel like I've got a really good start until everything kind of levels out and I go, oh, everyone got the same start. Carl?
Yeah, the normal start, which is what we all do, and it's easy, and you just click it into first, wait for it goes to green, and then just floor it, is fine. I've used that to good effect all the time. Yeah. It is nothing wrong with it. You won't lose unless somebody's got a trick start near you. You will not lose, and it is guaranteed fail safe. It will never go wrong. You're never going to spin the wheels. It's never going to go wrong. You're rarely going to jump start. So I would highly recommend take the easy route.
Red light, first gear, auto blip, auto clutch on, green light comes on, floor it, it'll get you away. And I think that's appropriate for our level if there was a World Cup of iRacing, maybe not, but it's not that. Alex?
Also, if you're the type of person that starts mid-pack a lot of the time and tend to get yourself in a lot of first lap scraps, it's pointless using
exactly.
it.
Exactly. 10th is as dangerous as 12th. Do I need to surprise someone from behind by
if
getting
you'll start,
that?
Yeah. If you're starting 3rd or 4th, it's brilliant because you can literally go, and I did it in Formula One and I did it in Formula Renault. You'd go from 4th to 1st without a problem.
All right. Well, good. All right. Well, look, don't worry, listeners. We'll sort this out. I'll come to some arrangement. We'll get this disseminated. I don't like the cutthroat attitude of my panelists here. But it leads us to a good question, actually, what we were talking about. There was a question from listeners, and please do send them to us. SpannersReady@gmail.com at the moment. We've got some fancy @missedapex.net email addresses on their way, but they're not here yet. SpannersReady@gmail.com. And let's take the question from Tim Llewellyn. Yeah. So he says, thanks so much for the new iRacing podcast. As a real beginner to iRacing, I appreciate all that you are sharing or not sharing if my panel had their way. So, yeah, we're not going for an out-and-out, like, advice, like we're teaching anyone anything show. Hopefully some useful information comes out of that. But my main aim for this was, like, what we've got here at the moment, which is just, like, some friends talking about their iRacing experiences, and maybe we can learn together. Here's my question, says Tim. What is an appropriate progression of cars for beginners? I'm focused now on the MX-5 and really enjoying it. I would like to eventually move into the Formula 3 cars so I can do Armist Apex races, but I'm unsure how many steps are between the two. Should I go from the MX-5 to Skip Barber to the Formula Renault 2.0 to the F3 or straight to the F3 and just keep practicing it over and over again until I'm comfortable enough to compare? Thanks again for the podcast. Tim, amazing question. Kyle, let's go with you.
That is an extremely good question. A lot of it is up to preference, but if you go onto places like Reddit, most of the people will default to telling you to go and jump straight into the Skip Barber because it's very well populated. There's fantastic racing. But if you have aspirations to move into sort of more sort of serious, through want of a better expression, single seaters and ones that have a bit more downforce, then the Skip Barber is not very representative. It will teach you fantastic race skills, but it's not very representative of single seaters. So my personal recommendation would be to jump into something like the Formula Renault 2.0. It is a great little car, but also I actually think it is harder to drive than the F3 in
much.
A lot of aspects.
Yeah,
it
much.
Will teach you very, very good car control and skill. There's a very narrow window of operation. And for that, it will help your consistency. You'll learn how to drive it in a certain way and be safe, ultimately above all else. So I know Alex and myself and a lot of us, I think all of us here, mainly cut our teeth in Formula Renault 2.0. When we got onto iRacing, when we got out of the MX-5, and it sort of put us in good stead, and that would be my recommendation. Then straight into the F3.
I think me and Matt had a different experience because we spent quite a long time doing iRacing with Missed Apex, convincing you guys that was the way forward. Because I don't even know if I want to reveal this because I value the reputation of Alex and Kyle, but they were console racers. Guys, don't tweet this to anyone. Don't go around going, Kyle and Alex were console racers. But we took a while to convince you guys. You came around, but I have to say me and Matt were we had been spending a lot of time in the MX-5s before that.
Yeah, the console thing, to be fair, I feel like that's where it all started for me, because I started back doing console racing with a wheel back in 2011 because of BRKC, which is our karting series that we do. Mm. And it was just a whole bunch of the races from that on Wednesday nights, funnily enough, doing all that racing. I started with a Xbox 360 steering wheel, an ironing board, and a dining room chair.
No, but mate, okay. I mean, that's a whole different conversation. The original Xbox steering wheel at the time was one of the best steering wheels out there. It was brilliant. It was accessible. It was affordable. It was amazing. And I have attached that to ironing boards, side tables, all sorts of things. Right, but I don't want to get derailed too far down that path, because Matt, you and I came into this raw, and we were in the situation Tim was in. We spent a lot of time in the MX-5, and I don't regret any of that time. I had an absolute blast only doing MX-5, mostly because I was skint, and the prices in iRacing can be shocking. But I think you and I really benefited from a lot of time in the MX-5.
Yeah, and I would say to Tim, it depends on what you think you need to get better at. So if you need to get better at racing other people, then like Kyle said, skips are the place to be, because you can't get away and they're very forgiving and you can bang them wheel to wheel. If you're good at that, but you get in an F3 and you're like, oh, where's the breaking point? Then the Renault is a good choice because it's faster, has similar-ish dynamics, but it's not nearly as fast. So you can learn how to take a track apart and figure it out for yourself.
So I think you've hit the nail on the head there. It's the breaking point. With the MX-5, it is, what do you call it? ABS, isn't it? Anti-lock, whatever. So you can just get to the corner, hit the brake as hard as you want. Yeah, it is. Alex, you're shaking your head. It is. It's anti-lock.
Has it got ABS?
Yeah. Yeah, the MX-5. You can.
I tell you what, it's been so long. I think I did six races in the MX-5.
No, because it was a massive shock to my system, because I literally didn't buy any other car. I wanted to get involved with the big boys and play iRacing like the cool kids, but I convinced everyone, because you know I've got the organisational power of Missed Apex. I was like, no, I think we should stay with the MX-5 because it's really good for our level, and I don't want to put off new people when really I just didn't want to spend any money. So yeah, so I spent ages driving the MX-5, and you could literally just press the brake like an on-off button. And I think I learned a lot about racing with that. Tried the skid barber, hit the brake. Every time I hit the brakes, I skid, because I just didn't know. I didn't have anyone to talk about. I have no experience with racing. Every time I hit the brakes, the rears would lock up and they would skid. And now I'm being super cruel to my boy, because I've skipped the MX-5 with him completely. He is now straight in F3, and he has to give me 20 F3 laps before he can earn like a stock car race or a dirt race.
That's a good point you've just made. So, or a good statement. So you've put your boy straight into F3. And I think part of Tim's question was, should I just jump straight into F3? Now, if your ultimate aspiration is, if your ultimate aspiration is to go and race F3, then personally, I'm a bit of a masochist. I like to jump into hard things and just do stuff that is quite hard. There is nothing wrong with going to do quite a lot of offline practice and put yourself straight into it, because you will learn. You're just skipping out a couple of steps, and yes, you'll probably miss out on a bit of the racing experience that you would acquire by racing in the lower series. But you know, give it a go. Buy the car and give it a go.
Give it a go for sure. I still think go and do an MX-5 series. That I still think that's the way forward. Get in on the ground floor. Most of the tracks are free. In fact, all the tracks are free on the MX-5 series, apart from the sub. Just go and do that. Do a couple of series. Get used to what people are like in the iRacing community, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable, how to get through, how to set qualifying, how to get through sessions. I think the MX-5 series is perfect, apart from it not being a single seater.
I do have a theory about why me and Kyle don't like the MX-5. It's actually quite amazing. Me and Kyle have the exact same iRacing experience. We both had our first go on iRacing using your laptop.
Ah, yes, the Gateway laptop.
And I think that's why I hate the MX-5, because it was, you know, it gave me a chance to get on, and the physics worked, but I had it plugged into a laptop, plugged into my big screen telly, and it was horrendous for me. I just couldn't. It was running at like 30 frames a second, and it was terrible.
So,
and I wanted to get out of that car as quickly as possible. So then, when me and Carl both got our rigs, which are identical, and we bought at the exact same time, we both did the exact same things at the same time.
And that's the thrust of the conversation I wanted to have today. Was about equipment. There's so many different topics in equipment chat with iRacing, but I wanted to go down that route as well. The main thing actually I wanted to talk about was VR versus flat screen versus monitors. But yes, that's worth noting that it was Martin Clappers who just said, I've got a spare laptop. And when people have emailed me in the past and they've said, look, what's the minimum requirement I need to get into iRacing? What equipment do I need? There is a learning curve. There's a steep learning curve on what equipment will be appropriate. And there's also, obviously, there's a price that you have to pay if you don't already own a gaming PC. I have to say, I personally, the financial situation I was in when I started doing iRacing, I wouldn't have got involved if I didn't already need a PC for editing, for streaming. And it was a perfect storm for me. This laptop it's a very generous thing to just go have this laptop. But I think one of the key things was it had a dedicated graphics card, which meant that you could go and do iRacing. The frame rate, it wasn't great. It took forever to load up the actual things because I don't think it was an SSD. But I just wanted you guys involved. So who did I send it to first? I think I sent it to Alex first. I'm like, Alex, get involved. Look, I'll even give you a laptop that you could plug your steering wheel into. And you've got a tiny little screen in front of you. And I think a generous 27 frames per second.
It was really hard. I mean, it was a lovely thing to do, and I was never adverse to iRacing. I always wanted to, but the PC was always the issue. I didn't ever really want a laptop because you've got limitations with a laptop, and you can't modify it and change it as you go like you can with a standalone PC. But I just got so frustrated with console racing. Especially because, you know, I used to go to Brad's a lot to go and race on his sim. And from my little seat on a PlayStation at a big screen, and then I went to his, which at the time he had three screens.
Yeah, three big screens.
And a decent wheel. It was like, I need some of this. But it was always the money thing, because PCs aren't cheap. I mean, me and Kyle were so fortunate when we got ours. Our PC now is about 1,700 quid's worth of kit, but we paid much less than that because we got it just before the world went crazy. So we appreciate how, and it was the perfect storm for the pair of us on money side of things. And it's just that case of once you've got it and everything's set up, and then you step into your VR realm, it's opens up a whole new world. And I was having this conversation yesterday with a good friend of ours, Michael Weddle, when he was saying he tried VR again and he just doesn't like it and he can't get on with it. He misses the clarity that you get from three screens. But for me, it's the being there, the sat in the car, the looking to your left and looking to your right, of being able to see your competitors, see your front wheels. When you're wheel to wheel with somebody, you can see exactly where you're pointing the car at, which you can't do with three screens. But I remember my first experience of the Formula 3 was at Watkins Glen, and I spoke to Kyle. I was almost out of breath going, wow, what an experience.
Yes.
And you can't get that with screens.
No, and the screens don't give you that sense of motion. I think I've mentioned on here before, but the first time I went on the Charlotte Roval and I went up on the banking, and my mind was entirely convinced that I'd gone up on banking, and there's no physical reason why I should feel like I'm on banking, and it was incredible. So, trigger warning to flatheads out there who think that three-screen setups are brilliant, and they are. When I first went to Brad's garage, he had three, big screens. And when we went to Simply Race in Milton Keynes, who have those kind of three-screen setup booths, it's incredible. Because for the first time in racing, you can look to your right and there's your front wheel in the single seaters. And you can put the front wheel on the apex the same as you can in racing. You've got that amazing field of view. It's incredible.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So I'm not deriding those, but I think we are all a bit evangelically VR now. And we've got, I think the three of us here have got Rift S's. Matt, you're still rocking the Oculus DK one, the developer kit, one of the first ones. But are you still as evangelical about VR racing, or would you swap it for a big three screen monitor setup?
The advantage, as I see it, to the three screen is you can magnify it so that everything looks slower as you're driving at it.
Do you think?
But for me,
it feels slower when you've got monitors.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, absolutely. But for me, the advantage of virtual reality was, as Alex said, being able to spot my Apex before I got there. Because with the setup I had, half the time, Apex was blind. Yeah. I had to pick out something on my right and turn and hope that I got it.
Yes.
And hope that nobody else had driven up beside me in the meantime. And it was just, I mean, even in VR, I noticed the difference between my natural peripheral vision and what I get in VR, but what I get in VR is so much better than what I get on three screens that I think is worth it, at least for me. But I'm Captain Slow.
For me, it's undulation, scale, depth. And with those, like when you're going on Spa and you're going down and up Eau Rouge and Radeon, you don't get that on a screen. And I pick Spa for a specific reason, because I remember, again, not having had VR very, very long at this point, coming into the bus stop chicane, and you just see all the pit buildings, and they're huge.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And it feels like they're huge. And you feel like you're in this tiny little race car, which, again, I've said this several times, you just don't get from a screen.
I agree with everything said. Sorry, I don't mean to laud VR, but for me, I have a slightly different plus point for me. I'm quite easily distracted, but yet I bore quite easily as well. So I've actually had this experience recently when my VR headset broke and I've had to go back to using my TV like I did in the console
one
days.
One screen,
right. Quite far away from me because I can't get my rig close enough to it. It's like an old original setup I was using, and adjusting back to that was really quite tricky. But the thing that really stood out to me was I just wasn't as engaged. As I said, I bore quite easily. When I have the VR headset on, I've got nothing in my peripheral vision. I've got nothing else that can distract my mind or anything.
Carl,
and I
you're
feel
like a,
I'm
you're
living
like,
the moment.
Carl, you're like a police horse with blinkers on, is what you're saying.
Yes. Yes. And but I'm actually living the moment, and I get in there and I don't get distracted. When I was on the screen, I could see in my peripheral vision, I had like I could see the rest of my living room, my partner walking around,
lizards,
and I just wasn't living the moment. Oh yeah, lizard, obviously. And I just wasn't actually living the moment of that race, and I just had this disconnect, and that's why I really struggled with iRacing. I had a disconnect, so I went back and played some more arcadey sort of stuff, but still really fun. I went back and played F1 2020 because it was new and it was I didn't have to put too much thought into it and I could still be distracted and still play it. But yeah, so VR just gives me that connect to the racing that I never thought existed or could exist.
Now, I want to hear from flatheads. And hey, look, I'm not being screenist. I've got flathead friends. You know, some of my best friends are flatheads. But I'll hear from flatheads, spannersready@gmail.com. Tell me the advantages. I think some of them may argue that actually what you say is a disadvantage, they see it as an advantage. Because a lot of the times, like we talk about, we're talking to people and they're like, oh, I've got this amazing overlay and I've got 17 buttons and I'm using a macro keyboard. I'm like, how can you see a macro keyboard when you're in VR? And they're like, oh, no. You know, and they love having their big setup. I think people will look at the cost of VR. But then if I think I'm comparing VR to a proper three screen setup is what I'm comparing that to, Alex. Obviously, if your budget is one screen, which I've been in that position, then that's one thing. VR is going to be a step up. But compared to like three big monitors, isn't it there or thereabouts?
If you're talking just equipment, as in peripherals, VR is cheaper than three decent 144 hertz screens, not cheaper than one decent screen.
Yeah.
But the graphical power that you need to run
that.
VR, as you have experienced, is more so.
I will just say, though, you can run VR on a surprisingly low-powered graphics card. You might just have the settings down, but you can get that same experience. So my current Rift S, and I've had the CV1 before, and I had the DK2 that Matt has got. It's the same unit, I believe. Is you can run that off of a Gigabyte 1050 Ti, so a 1000 series Ti that doesn't even require extra power. That was when I bought it. It's the first graphics card we ever bought, and I believe it was just over 100 quid. So it's not mega money, and you can't put it on the highest settings, but you can run VR on there, and yes, that's enough to do Beat Saber and Fruit Ninja, by the way, which is incredibly satisfying because of the noises. But anyway, I digress. So whilst people say, yes, you need a 3000 series RTX card, you will be surprised the small amount of graphical power that will run a VR headset. But when you get up to the higher graphics cards, that's what you'll need if you want to run VR and have like all the detail when you go over the grass and you have the grass and your tires and all that kind of thing, Kyle.
Yeah. And I'd just like to say in the middle of this, there is no right and wrong way to do it. It is quite subjective.
Are you sure?
If you have the opportunity to try VR, because it is amazing and it is a literal game changer. Mm-hmm. But if you can do it on a laptop plugged into your TV, as Alex and I started.
And me.
Courtesy of Clappers.
Yep.
And Spanners, if you can do it that way and actually get involved and actually do it, then that's a massive win. Do it whichever way you can. As long as you're getting in there and enjoying it, there is no right or wrong way to do it, as long as you enjoy it.
The thing that I found from that laptop, and again, ultra cheap, blah, 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 minimum settings. The thing that I felt instantly between Project Cars 2, which we were playing on PS4
That's
at the time.
A console game.
With the big difference, okay, Project Cars looks better, just.
They played it with a joystick. They used to play it with a joystick.
But you can still instantly notice the physics difference. Mm. And that is the key point with iRacing. For anyone who's talking about it, and I had this conversation when a couple of my friends went to iRacing. Brad was on iRacing, and for the very short period of time that I had a go on Brad's sim, I was like, oh, it doesn't feel too much different. Once you settle in and spend a bit of time, you do actually then start to realize how impressive the physics engine of iRacing actually is compared to anything that a console can do. And there's no delay. And it's funny, I never noticed a delay on console until I went to, because when we went to PC, we were still doing our Project Cars. We were still doing an F1 championship, weren't we, Kyle? We were doing an F1 championship, and I sat in the pits and just pressed pause for for the last three races of the championship we did.
You just couldn't
drive the damn thing.
No, that's fair enough. And you guys were fairly evangelical that what you were doing was fine. And that's fine. That's what cults are like. But anyway, hang on. Where am I here? I'm trying not to insult too many people, and I'm entirely failing. And I'm lying that I didn't want to insult people. Pick yourself up off the floor, Van Jean. We all agree iRacing is brilliant. And in fact, it's fine. Console gaming is there to be as inclusive as possible, get as many people being able to pick it up and play as possible. iRacing is a bit less forgiving and wants you to then go and master how iRacing works. That's fair, Kyle, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you'll find most of the people who come to iRacing from console, like I was, like Alex was, we're the sort of people who, when you race on console, race with no assists and the cockpit view. And I was the kid, like the 7-8-year-old kid playing on Nintendo 64 and F1, F1 at a 13-year-old playing F1 1998 and stuff like that. On Nintendo 64 with no assists and using the cockpit view, which no one does. So obviously the natural progression is to get onto a sim. So you're in good stead. So if anybody is on console and listening to this, thinking about iRacing, and you play with no assist on console, then iRacing is definitely for you.
Now, I've been joking, but look, if you want to play a game on your console, completely fine. If you want to do sim racing, which is more akin to a sport, hopefully if you're listening to this, you've already been converted. So here's the $400 question, and we'll put it to Trumpets first. You are going to upgrade to a Rift S, which, by the way, I think is probably the go-to VR option right now. It's not the ultimate, I think, best for resolution, but it's really good. And, you know, there's a criticism with the field of view. We can go into all of that stuff. But it kind of feels like putting on a race helmet. It's the restriction in view you would have in a race helmet anyway. It's priced well right now. I think you can get a brand new set for £300. And secondhand sets priced better than that, obviously. If you don't mind a bit of sweaty VR grime, which I don't. I'm not too proud for that. You're upgrading to that, Matt, the Rift S with your computer. But I offer you a 3-monitor setup instead. Where are you going? Quick answer, where are you going? The Rift S or the 3-monitor setup? I just want to get a baseline here.
No, I understand the question. My personal situation, I couldn't run 3 screens, so it's an easy one.
All right, but you can run 3 screens. I'm asking you a hypothetical question so I can ask clever follow-ups. Which one are you having?
Don't know. I was going to wait till after the Rift S.
Oh, okay.
But I would stick with VR, basically, because
okay.
I know that's what you want me to say.
No, okay. That does,
I mean, in the sense, you want an answer to that question.
To that question, and that does help us progress out of this bog hole. Okay, Matt, who I now regret putting this to, I am going to give you, instead, I am going to give you the £200 cash back. So it's now £200 cheaper for the 3-monitor setup. Where do you go? And pounds are roughly worth, I don't know, a dollar and a bit. I don't know.
I just hope it's closer to a dollar next time I get to travel back. I honestly would have a hard time going back to 3 screens. I would be like, I need to go do it and make sure it would work for me before I would commit to it, even at the cheaper price.
All right. You're slow like me. Here we go. No, hang on, Cole. I'll give the same question. This same question to everyone. Matt, go to 3 monitors and you are 0.4 a lap quicker. You're taking your 3 monitors?
Yep, absolutely.
Kyle, I'm going to give you 0.2. Are you going to 3 screens?
For 0.2?
0.2, yeah.
Nah.
No?
Not for 0.2.
I'm giving you 0.4, Kyle. Are you going to 3 screens?
Yes.
Alex, 0.4. Are you going to 3 screens? Good. I'm glad that's tough for you.
Do you know what? I'm still saying no.
Yeah.
And it's because for me, it's not lap time that I have necessarily gained from VR. What I have gained from VR eventually is better racecraft and more consistency.
Yeah.
Consistency was my biggest problem on console. I could always be quick. I was always there or thereabouts, but I just would get distracted by the cat running past or whatever and just miss an apex. I don't really do that as much. I can't remember the last time I really completely fluffed the braking zone just because I'd got distracted by something else, because there's nothing to be distracted by. So, you know, unless you're going to give me a second and can still guarantee me the consistency, I just don't think I would. And also, the other things you can do in VR that aren't sim racing. I know we're not going to really get into that, but some of the things, especially some of the things that me and Kyle are doing right now.
Wait a minute, whoa,
VR
whoa, whoa.
Is amazing. Whoa. Stuff.
You're making that sound that sounds... so.
Okay, like, what I'm actually talking naughty. About is flying aeroplanes and spaceships.
Yeah.
That sounded rather.
Definitely made yeah. it sound like a sex thing. 100%. Oh
you
my
guys
goodness.
Just live in the gutter. I'm going to listen back to this tomorrow and go, oh, crap, why did I say that? But yeah, no. Things like spaceships and things like
yes.
flight sims, are just unbelievable.
So moving to VR for iRacing means that it has ruined flat screen games for me. The only game I will now play is whenever the next Halo comes out.
Has absolutely completely yep. ruined any flat screen gaming for me. The only time I do anything flat screen now is on a weekend when I'm hiding from my kids. I take my PC into the kitchen and I play the F1 Manager game.
I'm similar, and as I previously mentioned, I've had this very recently where I lost my headset and I had a month on a flat screen on TV, back to what it was. And yeah, the first couple of times and the first sort of few days of trying to, that's why I come off the sim and went
yeah,
to a
your
game.
Heart
but
wasn't
actually,
in it.
Yeah, actually, I rediscovered how fun it can be. So some of the games that I was playing on there are actually really, really fun. It's not a bad thing. Don't sit there and think it's a really, really bad thing, because it is. It just takes a lot of getting used to, but. Wow, when I got my headset back, I appreciate it loads more. So now yeah. it feels twice as good, because you really realize how much of a step forward for certain people it is. We're lucky. We don't get motion sickness. Some people get very bad sure. motion sickness with VR and can't do it, and that's quite a shame. But flat screen, you can still have an awful lot of fun.
On the motion sickness thing, because it's actually a really pertinent point, which is a case of... the people who have issues with motion sickness, I had it when I first got VR, but I had to train myself. I did a whole lot of research beforehand, and certain things you can do, which maybe we'll discuss on another show about how to get over that. But don't just jump straight into a simulator, because you will be sick. It's a case of start on smaller games and build yourself up.
Okay, I agree. And also, not all VR systems are made equally. So I've explored every single VR thing as it came out, from Google Cardboard onwards to the what was the gear one where you could stick your phone in there. All of those made me feel sick, but I stuck with it because VR is so awesome. And the DK2 the Matt has, that gave me some motion sickness, but I just accepted it. I was just like, oh yeah, I'm gonna do this cool thing, but it makes you feel sick, you know. It's like going to a nightclub. And the CV1 less so, and the Rift, there's nothing whatsoever. So ultimately, you do what makes you happy, and if you prefer the less immersive experience of the screens, because it means, you know, you're kind of in your room, completely fine. I respect that. For me, having VR is the difference between playing the game, racing the sim, and just being in it. So for the time I spend in the VR headset, in this, I'm just there. I'm just driving my slightly blurry F3 car around Spa, but it's amazing, and your brain kind of adjusts for the ultimate lack of resolution in VR, and that's only going to get better.
Yeah. Also, we know we're going on about VR a bit more about iRacing now. About the so VR and iRacing. When I went back to flat screen, I didn't really lose any pace. So it's not like VR will make you faster. It's a better experience. I found there wasn't a lot in the pace. What I was massively lacking, and why I didn't go and race that many or any officials at all when I was on the flat screen, was that I didn't have the spatial awareness or the ability to race wheel to wheel with other people as I did in VR.
That's funny, because I got my VR pretty early in my sim racing career, and it made me a lot faster.
I have to be honest here, the not losing pace thing is a Kyle Power thing and not a not VR thing. As I did state earlier, Kyle has this weird knack of all of a sudden being perfect at everything he does, and it's really frustrating.
And also, Matt did come from a laptop screen to VR, so that's like suddenly I would equate the VR to a big proper three screen setup. Happy to get your correspondence, happy to find out why we're wrong, and like, you can just yell at us for being evangelical about VR or whatever. I don't think we strayed too far from iRacing. Equipment chat is a massive part of iRacing, and like we said right at the beginning, it's a broad church. I spent many years making sure that I definitely liked this hobby before, like, I invested in a lot of equipment. I've done everything from the clappers, laptop type situation, 20 frames a second, desk clamp. I've even competed in iRacing races with no force feedback. Matt jumped on with an Xbox controller. He never told us. He didn't tell us, but he was there competing in iRacing Miss Apex Championships with a controller.
Yeah, for a bit.
So, look, it's a broad church. We're definitely not being elitist. We're not shaming anyone. We're not doing anything like that. But it is a journey with equipment. And just like with golf, you know, people start off with mini golf, or they start off with a putting green. Then they go, maybe they'll rent some clubs when they go to the thing, and then they'll get a secondhand bag off of eBay. And then suddenly they're obsessed with, instead of practicing, researching the best weighted club and spending £400 on a driver. iRacing is really more comparable with golf than any other hobby I've ever known.
That is absolutely true. I've been that person on a golf course with the clubs that you've bought for a couple of quid from the skip or the dump, and you managed to get it. And iRacing is the same. Like, do it by whatever means you can. As long as you're in there and you're enjoying it and getting involved, that's the important thing. And you can do it all different scales. You can spend, I mean, even us now with our VR, some other people's setups make us feel rather insignificant, have unbelievable setups. Like, you can take it as far as you want to take it.
And don't be scared to get into eBay stuff. Get into a good community of iRacers. I've got Danny Henney's steering wheel kit here. My first play seat was secondhand. My first steering wheel was actually from, I think, Sam Watley in Race Control from Missed Apex Series, which is like, I've got a spare one hanging around, just grab it. And so, you know, don't be afraid to just, you know, go on eBay, try different things out, buy and sell and stuff, and email us and get in contact with us if you want any specific questions answered on equipment. We'll probably go back to a bit of racing out and out, getting faster chat, but it's been wonderful to speak to these guys about, you know, the day-to-day. I think the equipment is a massive part of this hobby. Follow Kyle at KylePowerF1 on Twitter. Follow Alex Van Geen on his YouTube channel by searching for Alex Van Geen, V-A-N-G-E-E-N, V-A-N-G-E-E-N. Yeah, I've got that right. Correct amount of N's. He live streams himself flying spaceships and doing iRacing and all those kind of things. Follow Matt at MattPT55 on Twitter. You can email him as well, MattPT55@gmail.com. But really, I mean, why waste your time? Follow me. I'm the best one. At SpannersReady on Twitter. Email any questions to SpannersReady@gmail.com. Let's get faster. Let's enjoy our iRacing. And wherever I see you next, work hard, be kind, and have fun. This was Missed Apex iRacing Podcast. See, we don't need some tyre testing professional race driver to talk about iRacing stuff.
That was really good.
Maybe it was even better. Probably even better.
I've been dying to get on the show for ages. Love it. I think it's some of the best output Missed Apex Network does, if I'm brutally honest.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.